We want a dynamite from the most wrestling site, AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitin, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Rewind to Dynamite. I am John Pollock, joined as always by one Waiting.
Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Way.
Good. Happy to hear it. Anything in particular? Explain your answer.
I was just making small talk, that's all. It's fine. Everything's fine.
Okay. All right. All right, then. Cool. Good.
Okay, then. You don't seem to believe me, but I
do believe you. I do believe you. Okay. I don't have much else to say about it. I care, but not enough to continue talking about it.
Oh. How do you feel this many days removed from the blockbuster announcement of Raw going to 2 hours? Has it sunk in for you, Way? This came very sporadic on Monday night. Have you had a chance since Monday night to really sit down and reflect on what this is going to mean for those 13 weeks of your life? Has it sunk in further from Monday night where you were just reacting?
I mean, it's sunk it in, sure. I don't know if I'm making it as big of a deal in my head as like maybe others are. Honestly, it's I just know it's temporary, and therefore I'm not going to get that excited about it.
What a glass half empty type of answer.
Well, 13 weeks will go by just like that.
It does, wait, but just think. Do you remember what your life was like pre 3 hour Raws?
Mm-mm. No, not.
Can you
not
go
really.
Back? Can you go back that far to July of 2012?
How are you doing tonight, Way?
Doing okay, actually. I'm doing fine.
Doing okay for someone that just spent 180 minutes watching WWE Raw.
Yeah, I'm okay because I think I'm mentally prepared, so it's fine.
This is the beginning of, this is Monday night for the rest of our lives, Way, or at least until WWE comes to their senses.
Yeah, we'll see how the ratings do. That'll be the true indicator, I suppose.
Oh my God. Man, I sound like I was 12.
12 I sounded ago. Like I was 13, so you weren't God. Too far behind me.
Jeez, wow. Okay, well, thank you for the deep pull. I don't know how I sounded by the end of maybe that month, but maybe not as optimistic then.
Probably dejected, but here we are, 12 plus years later. We have lots to get to on tonight's show. It was a very packed edition of Dynamite from Lexington, Kentucky, and we have a lot of news to get to as well. So, Way, we are going to dive into things. Want to make mention off the top that Way and I are going to be getting together on Thursday, and we are going to be presenting the latest installment of Talk. And this is our Way hosted the last Talk, and therefore I am opening up my home to Way on Thursday. So we will do this in person. Items to be determined. But tune in on Thursday, postwrestlingcafe.com. That show will be dropping for all of our members. Look out for that. Just a small portion of what's on the menu this month. We'll also be getting back to December of 2004 next week with a Rewind Away covering the Trish Stratus Lita headlined edition of Raw from Charlotte, North Carolina. It's 2004 WWE, so it's probably going to not age well, would be my guess, without even watching this episode. But we will see what 2004 has in store for us back during the two-hour era of Raw.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, beyond, I think, the main event that a lot of people might remember for being a significant event, I'm always curious to see what are the things nobody remembers that are in the middle of these shows that we'll have a chance to speak about. So WWE Raw 2004, bring it on.
And the final promotion was on Tuesday night when 67 million people or so were watching the debate, or NXT, as we will get to in the ratings, not Wei Ting. You were out, well, in discussing Madam Web, and that is now available for everyone on MCU Hater. And without giving away too much, did this live up to the low expectations that this movie provided you?
Did it live up to the low expectations? I would say yes, but I also had high expectations for, I think, maybe some sort of like schadenfreude, you know, pleasure coming out of it, and I didn't even get that. So in some ways, it underdelivered. It did make for, I think, a really engaging conversation that I had with Rich and WH. So if you're looking for wrestling podcasters talking about maybe one of the most critically panned movies of the entire year, you will find that on this week's edition of MCU Hater. The last edition of MCU Hater for the time being, because next week they're back with Agatha All Along.
Yes. What else could you close with then, Madam Web? You can't go any lower than Madam Web, I assume.
Well, I think Morbius is probably going to be something they'll be touching on in the future.
I'm not going to go through the whole retrospective on Kuniaki Kobayashi, because I did do both a written obit on Kobayashi, and for Post Wrestling Cafe members, the audio news update from Tuesday is the spoken version of that obit. But just kind of the Cole's notes on him: this was someone who was a real prominent junior heavyweight in New Japan's history, and also was part of Choshu's group that would migrate over to All Japan in 1984, at a key part in the battle between those two companies. So I mean, he started in the New Japan dojo at the age of 16 and made his debut in early 73, and would end up going to the U.S., where he worked in a lot of territories, from Florida, Georgia, in Missouri, where he was working with a lot of real big name talent. Like, he had a match in St. Louis at their KPLR studios against Jack Briscoe when Jack Briscoe was NWA champion. He went to California, spent a lot of time in Mexico for about 2 years with the UWF, and did some shots in EMLL. But it was in Japan, when he came back the second time, that he got kind of that is when the junior heavyweight division was really cooking, with Tiger Mask, Dynamite Kid, and others as well. And Kuniaki Kobayashi wasn't the most famous rival of Tiger Mask, but I mean, it was a real like significant series of matches that they had over the years, and became someone that was synonymous with Tiger Mask, not just Satoru Sayama, but also Mitsuharu Misawa. He would feud with him when he was Tiger Mask too as well. They, after going to All Japan for those number of years, that's when Choshu's crew, they came back to New Japan in 87, and Kobayashi came with them, and that's where he spent the rest of his career. He would move up to heavyweight in the 90s, formed a group, the Skinheads, was also and would team with Shiro Koshinaka, who was part of that group, and sadly had just bout after bout with cancer at a very young age. In 1992, he was first diagnosed with colon cancer. Then it would metastasize to his liver. He had lung issues on top of that, and just this past year had been diagnosed with a pancreatic cancer. But it was some of those ailments that ultimately ended his career at a pretty young age in 2000. He did his retirement match with Liger, would come out of retirement multiple times throughout his career, and we actually got to see him at the second night of Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome for Liger's retirement match, where he was in the corner of Liger as well. Just the symbolism there being that the very first show that New Japan ran at the Tokyo Dome in April of 1989, that was Keiichi Yamada had been wrestling for several years, but that was the introduction of the Jushin Thunder Liger character, and Kobayashi was his opponent that night. And those two were linked with the hope of making Liger into the next iteration of Tiger Mask, and having that symmetry with Kuniaki Kobayashi. But after his career, he was always affiliated with New Japan. He worked in their dojo doing all kinds of different roles. He would pop up on commentary every now and then. And very just sad news, because he battled a lot of health issues that affected his career. And sadly, it was a pancreatic cancer that he had been diagnosed with earlier this year. He was 68 years old. And you can read the entire bio, if you would like, up at postwrestling.com. Mark Shapiro was part of something. I want to get the name right here, Way, if you ever want to attend the Goldman Sachs Communicopia and Technology Conference.
Okay.
That sounds very, very intriguing. He spoke about a number of different subjects related to UFC and WWE. He mentioned that the exclusive negotiating window between the UFC and Disney will begin on January 15th next year and run until April 15th. So they have 3 months of exclusive negotiating, and then they could, in theory, take the UFC rights to the open market, and stated that it's our intention to re-sign with Disney because they have shown that they do it best. And he stated they understand synergy. They understand marketing. They've done a great job technologically with developing their platform, engaging their consumers. And of course, ESPN Flagship, which is their direct to consumer, is on the way. So we're anxious to see what that's about and where we can fit in there. All the buzzwords you want to hear from your top level executive, way synergy, marketing, platforms, engagement, consumers.
I wouldn't expect anything less.
And he also had this to say when it came to their strategy as it evolves with WWE and its shrinking live events.
But there's a lot of room to go in WWE because, frankly, there was no dynamic pricing tools for these events. And keep in mind, they had 300 events. What we're also doing is we're cutting events at WWE. So we're taking our low-margin, marginally profitable events, untelevised events that Vince had put in place to grow the brand, right? You're taking the show on the road, and we got to go to every city we can get to grow the WWE brand. Well, the WWE brand, while we still have to grow it, it's on fire right now. So we don't need to carry these marginally profitable events. So what was 300 will be roughly 250 this year. And next year, we'll be close to 200. So that alone is going to give us margin expansion. And then, of course, the site fees. We have an entire team. All they do is, you want us to bring Raw, SmackDown, PLE, a pay-per-view to your city, to your country, Middle East, Canada, Australia, Europe, whatever it might be, you have to pay to have it there. It's no different than the success Liberty's had with F1. So a lot of opportunity. UFC's coming off a terrific site fee deal they did to go to Saudi Arabia. They also get paid to go to Abu Dhabi. And from a U.S. standpoint, when you have a fight every week, you'd be surprised how many municipalities and local governments and tourism boards can open up the wallet so that you bring the show to town.
Mm-hmm. A Mark Shapiro quote, if there ever was one.
Yeah, I find him so fascinating to, I guess, have now in the wrestling space, and not just really have in the wrestling space, but he's essentially in control of the biggest wrestling company in the world, at least, you know, making a lot of the financial decisions that are directly affecting it. And it's fascinating to me to hear somebody who is so completely divorced from, like, the traditions of professional wrestling, maybe just, you know, for all we could say about Vince, at least, like, I think Vince maybe saw some sort of traditional value in house shows, or a traditional value in not putting logos everywhere. Mark Shapiro has none of that. He has no, I would say, nostalgia, you know, for any of these sort of things. And all he sees is what we can make money on. How can we make this the most financially profitable venture, you know, that it can be? And I find it fascinating. And I would say he's been very successful at it so far.
He said in the conference that, you know, they never... Let me get the wording right. They never activated the arena. They never turned the arena on to all of these. And the feedback he's gotten from fans, they don't care. They don't care about any of this. And I can't say he's wrong. There's no outrage over all of these logos and integration. And it's pretty heavy on some of these shows, the amount, especially when you're going from zero to what they're producing now. You would think on its face it would be a bit of a shock to some WWE fans. But there hasn't been. There's not a whole lot of pushback. Like, they've found a great revenue source for them. And I would say on the house shows, I can make a lot of compelling reasons for and against them. But in that note, like, we're talking now about how few house shows there are. I think there's two U.S. domestic house shows scheduled between now and the post-Christmas run of live events. Two. And next year, they're talking about slashing another 50 from what they're projected to do this year. Like, house shows are going to be exceptionally few and far between. And I would think you're going to have your post-Christmas run, because those are always major arenas they can run, and a lot of European house shows in concert with a premium live event or your two European tours per year. But it's there's going to be their idea is like scarcity, and when they do come to your town, it's a big deal. And these are just they're not the juice is not worth the squeeze on these events, even though this is a time when house shows are not the drag on the business that they were several years ago.
They're just marginally profitable, you know, and I mean, not that I would ever expect like that much detail about what that exactly means, but I would be very curious, you know, like how much is does talent cost for a house show? How much does like production cost for a house show versus, you know, revenue that you're generating that makes it not as worthwhile? Obviously, you're not getting any sort of TV rights, you know, attached to these shows that you're putting on. You're booking the venues probably for a similar amount of money. But I'm just so curious to know like exactly kind of like what this decision is based on, and to the point where like he's almost celebrating the fact that we're going to get rid of house shows and the company's going to be that much more profitable, you know? So what impact do you think this might have on the wrestling quality? I would say if at all.
Well, I think there is a concern that it's not as though NXT is doing all these shows that are allowing talent to get on the road, be in front of different fans beyond just the TV every week. And I think like there is going to be that effect when so many are coming in off these NIL deals or tryouts and they're starting from scratch in a WWE system. You're going to have less house shows than ever. It's a case by case basis. I'm just picking two people out of here, but a Maxine greatly could use house show experience and to get out there on the road and make your mistakes in a closed setting versus national television. For somebody like Kevin Owens, does he need to be doing all of these house shows per year? No, he doesn't. And it's probably our highest paid talent are probably going to be having better lives as a result of this reduced schedule that they're with their families, they're with their children, and the wear and tear is going to be like if we can squeeze some more years out of these people. And it's not as uncommon now that a 45-year-old can still wrestle, that your Sheamuses, your AJ Styles are still wrestling at a very high level, and you're not shortening that time span on live events that they're nice to have. And again, I would want to mix. I wouldn't want to just completely slash them, but they're coming pretty close, at least in the US and Canada, to pretty much slashing them next year.
That sort of schedule was, I think, one of the bargaining chips that AEW had over WWE for at least a good chunk of you know, this existing rivalry. So, I mean, does that no longer make AEW as interesting of an option for people to go towards? Yeah. How do you think they're going to maybe make up for that? Because I'm sure they're aware that, you know, especially their younger talents are missing the reps that I think are so required for continued development, not just the, you know, NIL talents that are down in the performance centers, but a lot of the younger talents that are on the main roster. How will they fix that?
I don't think you can replicate just at scale of your roster getting in all of those reps, but I'm hopeful that a lot of these partnerships that they're working on, there's at least going to be some talent that are getting outside dates, and they're going to do house shows or other matches, but on someone else's dime. And for a Josh Briggs and a Tavion Heights, I think that's invaluable experience to go do the N1. But again, that's going to be a very select few that are going to get those experiences. I think there is going to be a shortfall, and we'll see over time if there's going to be a lag in just people being able to develop at a high rate. But then you also get people like Bron Breakker, who comes in and the guy was a prodigy from the start. And if you can get a couple of those every few years, and others fall by the wayside, you're still going to be coming out ahead.
Sure. Yeah. But we're entering like a pretty interesting point in the business where like potentially every match that somebody could have in their career, maybe a televised broadcast, you know. I mean, obviously not counting a lot of their practice matches, but their official matches that might be on record, they might all be televised.
Yeah. And we're getting to a point like in this generation where there's a lot of people you're seeing almost their first matches to date, like for a lot of them, at least in WWE. And it is a question for both WWE and AEW, is talent that you want to be able to get that experience, but at the same time, it's the concern of getting injured elsewhere and not having that control that these companies are so used to having over their talents, and kind of entrusting that in outside promotions as well. So it's a very notable story for next year. He also did touch upon the antitrust case, and he came out very strongly against Judge Richard Boulware's refusal to accept the settlement terms, and stating that if this is not a favorable outcome for us, we will appeal, and they are going to go very strong if they get a judgment that they are not happy with. And this is a company that was willing to part with $335 million, which he indicated was more than their board of directors wanted to offer, but they went to 335, and it seemed like he came across like fuming over this judge that has gotten in the way of a settlement that both parties had agreed to. So it seems like they are not just going to be sitting back and accepting whatever. It sounds like they're going to be very aggressive in this fight with Boulware, and reaching a conclusion as quickly as they can. So anyway, that whole thing can be heard online. It's the Goldman Sachs Communicopia and Technology Conference. Lost my tickets in the mail, or else I would have been there. Ratings notes. There were some interesting developments the last couple of nights. We'll start off with Raw on Monday. The first night against Monday Night Football this season, the 49ers and the Jets across ABC, ESPN, the Manning cast, and ESPN Deportes did 20.5 million viewers, and that led to Raw falling to 1,430,000 viewers, which is down 14% from last week, and a 0.45 in the demo, which is down 8%, still managing to beat everything on cable minus the NFL, but this was a low number for Raw. In fact, the third hour was one of the lowest hours in the history of Raw on USA. But this is one week where ABC and ESPN did simulcast the game, and that's not going to be a weekly occurrence like we had last week. So this is going to likely be on the higher end of Monday Night Football games they go against. And yeah, the show, it did decline throughout the 3 hours. But according to WrestleNomics, the peak quarter, Bret Hart and Gunther, which had no ad breaks, but reached 1,650,000 viewers, and then dropped 17% in the next quarter. So Bret Hart, all these years later, still the peak audience draw on Monday night.
Still a draw. Maybe Bill Goldberg is coming back next. Maybe we'll get that interaction on screen at some point.
You can only imagine. Canada, not as impacted by Monday Night Football. The show has been doing very solid numbers. Like anything over 300,000 in Canada, that's a really good number. And for 5 of the last 6 weeks, Raw has topped that. They did 329,000 viewers this week. Second in the demo behind the NFL. They actually were ahead of the Jays and New York Mets game. So Raw performing stronger in Canada this week. And NXT on Tuesday night, up against the presidential debate. Did you see any of the debate?
I did, yes. Watched it.
What a memorable 90 minutes. The debate did 67 million viewers across broadcast and cable. NXT did not lose any audience. This was astounding. 628,000 viewers, basically identical to last week. The demo was up from a 0.17 last week to a 0.19. There was a 13% drop when the debate began, but I was astounded by this. It was like this audience, they were not of the 67 million people that were interested in this debate. They were like, no, damn it. I want to see the ending of this Trick Williams-Pete Dunne feud and find out what if Duke Hudson can stop Ridge Holland. I was stunned by this way that this was completely unimpacted by a debate that a huge amount of the country was watching. This is crazy. Like you're talking like this is larger than like a conference final for the NFL, like outside of the Super Bowl. Like nothing's doing 67 million viewers.
No, absolutely. Maybe just kind of goes to tell you that this is a very loyal fan base for NXT that they've dedicated. Now,
Maybe it was Julia. Maybe Julia was
well, Julia was the highest quarter, so she definitely did account for something. And I would say they did a great job of stacking the show to make it feel like it was one that I think you should have, you would be rewarded if you chose to watch it instead of not. Everybody watching, I can only assume, already knows who they're voting for, and therefore did not need to be convinced anymore.
Yeah, I am amazed at any undecided voters, like whatever your political leaning is. I don't know how you're sitting back and being like, man, I just don't know.
I mean, you don't know what somebody is absorbing in terms of information. You don't know what their issues are. I mean, there are people sometimes who just haven't thought about this at all, and maybe for that reason need a bit of convincing one way or another.
Well, Brandon Thurston also posted the quarters for Rampage, and these were insane. When that all-star eight-man tag started at the end of Collision, by the time they flipped over to Rampage, they had almost doubled their audience for that eight-man. And then when that eight-man ended, dude, this thing from quarter one of Rampage to the final quarter of Rampage fell 41% in viewers and 42% in the demo. This was an astronomical fall once this eight-man tag ended.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you look at the card, I don't think that's really any surprise, John. You know, like you had coming off of SmackDown, if you're channel flipping, you see Bryan Danielson, you see Claudio Castagnoli. Who are their opponents?
It was the Bucks, Okada, and Jack Perry.
Yeah, that's a pretty big, you know, marquee value.
It was a stacked match. And it was like the growth of that match was insane.
And to follow it, I mean, you're kind of met with like a pretty standard edition Rampage that tells you a lot of people don't see the bunch of, like, people can tell when they're watching Stars versus when they're not watching Stars. And could AEW have capitalized better with like a more interesting card towards the back end of Rampage? Maybe. Something about all of this, though, tells me that Tony, in one way or another, isn't that concerned about any of like whatever Rampage's ratings are. Otherwise, I think he would have made some of those changes by now.
Well, there you go. And just want to make mention that coming up on Friday night, CMLL has its 91st anniversary card. And I think this is going to be a big one. And by big one, I mean permeating outside of the, you know, regular CMLL Lucha audience. It's going to be airing at 10:30 Eastern on Friday night on its YouTube, on the top tier of its YouTube subscription service. So do make yourself aware of that. It's like $34.95 for that top package that gets you the Friday night Arena Mexico shows. They are going with Chris Jericho and Mystico in the main event, which is going to be drawing the largest outside audience. I was curious if they were going to do anything tonight, but they did not. Maybe Mystico should have been in the excavator. And
maybe he should have been in the backpack.
Imagine, yeah, contortionist Mystico comes out of the backpack.
Does Mystico have a backpack that Jericho can steal? Everybody's got a backpack.
Well, that's going to headline. And then in the mask versus mask four-way, it says Finge, Hechicero, Euphoria, and Valiente, and Orange Cassidy, who will be making the trip. I wonder if they do some angle on this show, teaming with Rocky Romero and Satoshi Kojima against Atlantis Jr., Ultimo Guerrero, and Volador Jr., and in the other top matches, Willow Nightingale defending the women's title against Zeuxis, and Titan versus Máscara Dorada. But, I mean, these are always, like, the atmosphere is going to be insane for this show, and I feel that Jericho will be a big deal on this show. But, I mean, CMLL has been going through, it was not too many years ago that, God, were people so down on CMLL, and what a resurgence it has had over this last year. If it was not for just this subscription service being so costly, I feel I would be watching a lot more CMLL, but...
You got an extra hour on Mondays, John. You can fit this in if you really want it.
I did. So a friend of mine actually did message me during Monday and said, with the extra hour in October, are you going to check out more CMLL? And I had not seen the news yet, so I did not get what this person was referencing. And I'm thinking, like, he's talking about, like, daylight savings time? Like, what hour am I getting? And then I got the news, and all of it clicked to me, and I got it. But that was actually how I technically found out about the Raw to 2 hour move and how it ties into CMLL. But that's coming up on Friday night. Also coming up on Friday night is Wei Ting, who the season premiere of Rewind to SmackDown will not feature me. Instead, Neil Flanagan will be joining Wei Ting on Friday night as SmackDown is taking place from I don't even know where it is. It's coming up on Friday.
Somewhere very important, I'm sure. Yeah.
But one of those cities.
It's the USA debut. It's the season premiere. What did they announce for Friday?
Cody Rhodes and Solo Sikoa.
Right.
So that is a big match.
A ton of surprises, I'm sure, everybody.
We will see what they have. If you're so curious, we will.
Mark Shapiro will be speaking.
Oh, could you imagine if he kicked off the USA Network era?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Welcome everyone to Friday Night Tonnage. We've got some great activations for you here during the USA Network era, and let me tell you about my new faction, the Margins, and their finisher is the Margin for Error.
Ooh, that's good. That's good.
It sounds nothing like Mark Shapiro.
I can't imagine there are many Mark Shapiro impressions that are out there in podcasts.
Seattle, Washington is where we are. Cody Rhodes, Solo Sikoa in a steel cage match. A-Town Down against Kevin Owens and a mystery partner. And Carmelo Hayes against Andrade in chapter 85.
Okay. All right.
So there you go. Seattle.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU Later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Tonight, they were not in Seattle. They were at the Rupp Arena in Lexington, Kentucky. Last number from WrestleTix, 2,721. And we start off with the immediate aftermath of the Bryan Danielson suffocation on Saturday with Jon Moxley's comments right post-attack, stating in the parking lot that Danielson doesn't have the stomach for this. We made a commitment years ago to build something that would last and an idea that couldn't be destroyed. Not for the money. We didn't do it for the recognition. And he accuses Brian of having too much patience and empathy. All I see are egos and it's out of control. I can't take it anymore. Our mentor, referring to William Regal, called Danielson the perfect wrestler. But Regal always said that he saw himself in Moxley. We are what we are. We can't pretend to be anything else. I'm no villain, and I'm no hero. But I know now why God put me here. And he is the one true king of these lands. We tried your way, Danielson. Diplomacy has failed. And today, I choose war.
Mm-hmm. Great promo. Great promo from Mox. As always, you know, what else would you expect from a guy? I don't think he's missed once since he's been in AEW, since he's been Jon Moxley. This felt real. It felt dramatic and gave you the reason for the turn. A philosophical, difference, you know, between Bryan Danielson and Jon Moxley here. Bryan, I guess, in this context, as Jon Moxley says, is the empathetic one. And Moxley is the militant one. So Brian is Professor X. Jon Moxley is Magneto. All right. Great promo from Mox and told you everything you needed to know to explain why he put a bag over the man's head.
You always have to be able to justify such an action. Shivani brings out the patriarchy. And Cage has
Darby Allin's finally shown up.
That's right. Darby skates into the arena and he is here to hear out Jon Moxley for later. Mm-hmm. Christian Cage says that his son Nick has told him that he has infinite aura and he has carried this company for the last year and a half. Our trios titles were stolen from us, but when Killswitch grabbed me by the throat, I saw in his eyes the monster has awakened, and he has now realized he is a killer and the most complete big man in the business, and he belongs to me. And the crowd is chanting Luchasaurus. It was not the right time to cash in at All Out, but he warns Danielson, your days are numbered, and says, I will do anything to beat you, and I will beat you so badly. You'll wish Brie was the one with CTE, so she can't comprehend what an embarrassment you were as champion. And he holds up his contract that reads, next, AEW champion. And as they are exiting, Kip Sabian is shown behind the barricade and wanders off. But there was no follow-up to this, other than Kip Sabian is trying... It sounds like they're teasing like Kip Sabian after this this war with the patriarchy. He's going to find himself adopted by his new father, Christian Cage.
Yeah, sure. Great. Yeah, you know, having this come so soon after the Moxley promo, I mean, really just kind of shows you that everybody is coming for Bryan Danielson right now. Poor guy. But I felt like maybe kind of poor placement to have this come right after Moxley, because I thought Moxley's promo was so steeped in, like, reality and actual sort of, like, fear. You know, we're coming off a guy suffocating another man with a bag here. And I kind of feel like Cage and almost everything he does, he's very entertaining, but it's somewhat steeped in a little bit of comedy. You know, like, he does these very over the top jokes about people's deceased parents, but almost with, like, you know, good level of dark humor attached to it. So I think it's also like the end of the resulting matchup that I'm less excited for to see between Cage and Bryan Danielson as well. So to have this follow Mox right afterwards didn't make me as excited for this one. But I guess this also might be less of a build to an actual match and more of just like constant lingering threat of this cash-in happening in the background.
That's what I took, is that this is going to be this background that I don't think they're going to hit you over the head with Christian every week, but it's this lingering person in the background that is always there. And this is not something immediate that's going to be climaxing. Renee is with the Callis family, and they have called in Will Ospreay. And Callis mentions how Ospreay has won every casino gauntlet he's taken part in and proposes he team up for one night with Kyle Fletcher, because he feels that's his best shot to win. And all this while Konosuke Takeshita is standing right there. And Ospreay is explaining, I've got a lot on my plate. I need to focus on Ricochet. Callis brings up that you owe me a favor, and he's calling in the favor. And Fletcher pleads to Ospreay how great it would be to team with him. No one knows me better than you. And Ospreay notes he's no Mark Davis, but he'll team up with Kyle Fletcher. And Takeshita is furious.
Well, I don't know if they were so much teasing like Takeshita being jealous of not being chosen, because I think clearly Callis has plans for Takeshita with Okada. I felt it was more interesting that you had Kyle Fletcher say, there's not a single person I'd rather win these tag team championships with than you. Almost as a direct shot to Mark Davis. But we did have Ospreay kind of account for that by saying he's no Mark Davis, so they were kind of maybe patching that up. But still, Fletcher said it. So if I'm Mark Davis hearing my own tag team partner say that while I'm, you know, laid up, you know, still recovering, that might be some fuel for a future feud down the road.
Then they explained that Danielson will not be here tonight. He is home recovering, and Yuta is with him. Mm-hmm. We need some vignettes of Yuta, like, nursing him back to health.
Like taking Danielson to the mountains. Roderick Strong and Adam Cole, like that?
Perhaps.
No, I don't think so.
First match was Jack Perry and Leo Rush for the TNT title. Rush is out with Action Andretti, and Perry arrives in his bus, which the guy leaves running, and the door open as he goes out. The keys are in, the vehicle's on. Like, he's just screaming for someone to hijack this.
Would you want to steal this scapegoat van? I mean, where would you exactly hide it? It's, you can't really take the license plates off and just pretend, you know, it's well, yours.
He left this thing running throughout the entire match, and given like the exhaust and the fuel that came out of the back of this thing, there was some untapped potential in this lead up to the Danielson match that could have been explored.
Oh, interesting. Hey, don't remind me. Today I had to get a jump start to my car because my battery died from idling too long. So you got to be careful.
Did you just ask a stranger?
I had to actually call a friend who lived nearby.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Help a friend. Alex Marvez catches up with Jack. Oh, sorry. Skip this whole match. Andretti grabs Perry's leg after Perry goads him, and Andretti gets caught by Aubrey Edwards and is ejected. Action Andretti could not look like more of a geek in this moment here as he's thrown to the back after getting outsmarted by Jack Perry. I just, that was quite something. Yeah. Rush powers up with a pair of Tope Suicidas and then a Poison Rana, and then he does his bounce off the bottom rope, but Perry is not in position for the stunner, instead blasts him with a knee and then a flying version to pin Leo Rush and retain the title. I'd say like an average match, if anything. It was kind of your rehab victory for Jack Perry as the Danielson match is in the rear view and Jack Perry's off to take off in his bus.
Yeah, that's all it really was. You know, the TNT champion losing a match on pay-per-view, I think, required some form of victory. A chance for him to look dominant against a smaller guy named Leo Rush, but somebody who also happens to be an amazing wrestler. However, I would continue to say that in this match from Jack Perry, I continue to fail to see anything that's all that special about him. And at this point, given like the type of spotlight that he's receiving, he needs to show something that's a bit more special beyond, you know, like a CM Punk attached type of reaction from Chicago. You know, he was fine, but I didn't notice anything that jumped out to me about him here.
Alex Marvez caught up with him and he said that people like him are crucified in this life so they can be worshipped in the next one, and gets into his bus and takes off. Renee finds Hangman Page backstage and she asks him, "Where's your head at after Saturday?" He explains if he had found out that Swerve Strickland had 1,000 homes that he called home, he would have burned each one of them down, which would have been exceptionally consuming. You know how much work that would take?
Oh, this man is clearly very motivated. I mean, I'm sure to even burn down one home required an exceptional amount of work to find out.
Like, how many victims did Dexter Morgan have over like six seasons? I mean, that's a lot. What, 1,000?
I think it would require a lot of legal work from Tony Khan to try to keep him out of jail.
It would, but I mean, the man came out of this one unscathed. So he says that he meant every single word, he meant every action that he committed on Swerve, and that anyone who tried to protect Swerve, I will find you and I will hurt you. And he goes off camera and he knocks his dude over, walks past Top Flight, walks by Dark Order, and then he walks into Jeff Jarrett, who warns him about this path he is down that always ends with the person having guilt and regret. And you're going to regret putting your hands on my wife. And Paige just attacks Jarrett and tosses him onto these chairs. So a match is coming between these two at a certain point. I think Hangman is just so dialed in as this character. I think that he is, like, this is just taken off, that he is, I think, like, the most compelling he has been.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I never thought, like, a Hangman Page heel turn would turn out this well and this, I would say, scary, you know, as somebody, like, and they gave him the best motivation. They had a guy sneak into his kid's home and threaten his kid, and then receives like almost like no sort of comeuppance for it. So they've just done such a great job for it, and Hangman continues to really find this excellent voice for this heel character that he's got now. This was great follow-up for Paige. You know, told us exactly that he's changed permanently as a result of this Swerve Strickland feud, you know, to the point now where he really is the bully, and he's still got motivation for it. Anybody who's even been around and gotten my way as an obstacle for me getting to Swerve, I'm going to take it out on you as well. So we're seeing a guy who's just clearly consumed by, I think, the thrill of revenge, the thrill of violence, and it's not even so much about Swerve anymore. So this was, I think, a great exemplification of it. This was a great way of teeing up his next feud, giving great material for this Jeff Jarrett. Like, Jeff Jarrett's another person who, through all of this, has found just a tremendous sort of like shift in character, and this is great material for now Jarrett to work with as well.
How will it be received if Swerve, in his return, makes a stop to visit child number two at Hangman's house. Will that now be, will that be cheered by the audience?
Oh, yes, it will. I think we just want to see these two just do, like, just one-up each other. But at the same time, at this point, it would feel a little bit incongruent with, I think, like, the character growth that we're supposed to have seen from Swerve. He's a guy who, like, you know, he was about to do a second home invasion, but then thought better of it and decided to focus his efforts on his career instead. So
he has to have his descent into madness at some point after this loss.
The turn back into a heel turn. Well, he's got to be a bit more creative than a home invasion, okay? He's got to take it up a notch.
Private Party and Commander come out for their trios match, but we don't get started because Pac, Claudio, Moxley, and Marina Shafir attack them all, including Shafir choking out Commander. And Pac says they've been patient. This company is broken. And what happened on Saturday was inevitable. He has been lost, but not anymore. He now has a purpose. The second time, they state, diplomacy has failed, and this company is ours.
Yeah, so it reveals like what Moxley was talking about on that first week, and delivering the message to Tony Schiavone, and I'm assuming to Tony Khan through Tony Schiavone. But Pac is a perfect addition to all of this. I mean, I did have my doubts about him turning heel so soon, especially after that Ospreay match and the incredible reception he received. But I think as a heel voice, he sounds so great. And now as almost like a secondary voice in the BCC next to Moxley, I love those two sounding, you know, the way they sound together. Like, Brian obviously is great in the BCC, but Brian could never sound mean like these two could. And Pac definitely can. So I'm looking forward to this.
I wasn't too critical of this, but at some point, and maybe it is when Danielson is back, you do need, like you, tonight was more focused on Moxley and why he did this, but you need to hear from Claudio for sure at some point.
Absolutely.
Like, that is the one that would, you would argue would have had the tightest bond with Danielson, but can come. I don't think it had to have been done tonight, but you want to get to that at some point.
You want to hear Claudio speak to Yuta too, of course. Let's also remember
they're
trios,
and that can be done in time. They're rushing through a lot with Danielson, as we will get to in the coming weeks.
They're still trios champions.
They are all they still have the titles all together. The Learning Tree pull up in a Bentley convertible, and Jericho is wearing the jacket that Orange Cassidy destroyed 4 years ago. And he explains that he took the backpack as collateral. And while the money wasn't inside the backpack, he found something else in the backpack that he's going to reveal later.
Mm-hmm.
Next was Ricochet against Sammy Guevara, which was announced yesterday. Early on, the two are mirroring one another, and then Guevara gets drop-kicked out, and Ricochet hits this amazing Fosbury flop, landing on his feet seamlessly. And they go up the entranceway. Guevara nails him into the entrance and performs a moonsault off the tunnel, and looked like he was just grabbing his ankle after landing this. He got incredible height off of this tunnel. Guevara hits a twisting dive to the floor. The crowd is chanting, "Flip forever." And Ricochet is on the stage, on the ramp, and he is instructing these fans in the corner of the front row to move. And they finally move, and Ricochet does a double jump senton off the barricades onto Sammy Guevara, and he would have waffled these front row occupants had he not informed them. Ricochet then catches him on the shoulders. Guevara turns it into a destroyer, hits a flying cutter off the top, and then misses the shooting star. And after a flying knee, the GTH is blocked. Ricochet hits an axe kick and the vertigo, his new finisher, and pins Guevara in what I thought was a significantly better outing than the one we had 2 weeks ago. I thought this was just a great pairing between these two. And afterward, it's Beast Mortos that spears Ricochet. And I was so excited that we're getting Ricochet and Beast Mortos at probably in the next week or two. And Guevara is the one to chase him away with a chair, and the two show mutual respect afterward with the two shaking hands. But I thought this was really solid stuff between these two, and it gave you exactly what you wanted out of these two and their styles.
Yeah, I thought that, like, this really should have been Ricochet's actual debut, you know. And I mean, the match against Fletcher was fine, but there was nothing that felt all that special or unique about Ricochet and AEW coming out of it.
It was that tough crowd and champagne on top of it. Like, you're not looking on paper and thinking Kyle Fletcher and Ricochet is not going to tear the house down. But yeah, it just it didn't click like this did. And yeah, in hindsight, like this was kind of your introduction you would have wanted.
I thought Ricochet made more of an effort to do special things in this match, like more creative, unique spots. And I mean, Sammy Guevara was outstanding in this match, too. I think it's sort of like a perfect type of like they're picking some really great opponents for Ricochet in this to start this run between Fletcher and Sammy and now Beast Mortos, who I think are perfect opponents to showcase Ricochet, really. This was a home state crowd for Ricochet in Kentucky that maybe had something to do with, you know, a bigger reaction for him. But this was a match that delivered certainly more spectacular and unique offense and was definitely well worth watching. So, yeah, positive week for Ricochet this one.
Renee interviews Kazuchika Okada, and he is asked about All Out, and he gets all flustered. All Out was the hardest night of my life. And he pretends to cry. It was so easy. And Don Callis walks in with Takeshita, stating, "You never beat Takeshita." And Okada informs him, "Takeshita can be a champion, but not the Continental Champion." And he walks off screen and comes back to deliver, "Bitch." And everyone pops, because everyone loves this version of Okada. He is a heel to no one, but very entertaining. And they're teasing this one sooner than I thought, and I think coming out of Saturday, I guess you got that indication that this one is coming up soon.
Well, yeah, it's the only opponent that they're teasing for either of these two, so I almost sense, though, that because when is the C2 supposed to start, do we know?
Last year it was late November that it started, and it concluded at the December pay-per-view, so like that's months away.
I can see these two maybe having a first chapter, but I also see Okada keeping the belt through the C2 and Takeshita earning the
maybe they do the match it. And they do another draw.
Well, sure. Yeah, exactly. And then Takeshita,
like you do with Claudio.
I see Takeshita going through like the longer road of actually winning the tournament and maybe meeting Okada again in the final.
Yeah, there's multiple ways you could do it. You could do the draw. You could have Okada he beats him, and it's Takeshita's motivation to go into the Continental Classic and build himself back up to knock off Okada next year when you can do the match. Darby Allin comes out, and he is right here if someone is looking for me. So Moxley comes out with Marina Shafir and indicates he has no weapons. He just wants to talk. Moxley says nothing has changed between them. Darby cuts him off and says, "You and I, we don't act like superstars." He gives his backstory and stated that when he was getting into wrestling, he looked up to people that he wanted to emulate, but it turns out all those people ended up being fake, whose dignity could be bought, but not John Moxley. "So I wanted to be just like you. I love the fact that you still do independence because you love this. You don't do it for the money. And I would never have done what you did to Danielson. I would have never done it to Sting. And I don't want to be like you anymore." So Moxley explains that you've got a title shot at Grand Slam, but that isn't going to happen because Danielson is out and you are not ready to be a world champion. I would like your title shot. And Darby is confused at how forward he's being here and asks him, "Have you been drinking again? You sound self-entitled like everybody else in the back." And he dares Moxley to do something if he wants his title shot. So Moxley issues a challenge to Darby for Grand Slam with the title shot at stake, stating that he is going to prove Darby is far below him on the food chain. "You will never be AEW champion," which is probably a key line in this whole thing. "And I have never lied to you, and you have no idea what's going on. And this time, I'm going to teach you this lesson the hard way." And Darby accepts, warns him, "If you're going to burn AEW to the ground, I'll pull you into the fire." So I was like, okay, we're pivoting away because we're going to have Danielson sell this injury, and Darby's going to take a match in between because he can't fight for the title on this night. And by the end of tonight, we have got Bryan Danielson on this show wrestling, and Darby is wrestling out of the goodness of his heart. He is putting up this title shot. This made less sense by the end of the night, but I like this setup at 9:15 p.m.
Yeah, and I like the result of what is to come as well. That might
no one's going to argue about what you're getting, but this did demand a little bit of logic to be applied.
Agreed. They need to patch that up, and I think we'll talk more about it, I guess, when we talk about the segment. But this segment itself, I thought was fantastic. It was great. I love that, like, this, you know, even though Mox at this point has kind of revealed why he turned on Brian, he's still yet to reveal the exact aim of, like, what this BCC is supposed to be accomplishing when they say that they are trying to, I don't know, create a legacy for the business beyond, you know, themselves, and why exactly he needs a path towards the championship, why he needs to take the championship from Brian in order to achieve that. He's not telling anybody, including Darby Allin here. He's just saying, trust me, bro, you know, give me the title shot because this is for the greater good. This is something that needs to happen. Trust me, bro. And I kind of love
that. You'll never be world champion.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I kind of love that. I also love how, like, Mox in this segment is, like, they're, you know, these two are almost like a mentor-protege, you know, throughout their time in AEW over these past 5 years. And, like, Mox, despite now being a very clear heel, he's still maintaining that relationship here. He and Shafir do not attack Darby. They are very almost respectful to him. Like, no punches are thrown. Mox is almost, like, kind of telling little brother, hey, this is, you know, like, time for the adults to play. I want to protect you, so stay out of this. Just give me your title shot. And if you're not, okay, then I'm going to have to take it from you. I love their chemistry together, whether, you know, they're partners or now more so when they're actual rivals. And now that they have 5 years of, like, backstory attached to each other, I think this is now going to be maybe a more definitive Darby Allin, John Moxley feud. So, what do you think? Do you think we're obviously? I think Mox has to win and take the title off of, or sorry, take the title shot off of Darby. So does that mean we're not getting Darby and Brian?
I think you could certainly. You look at that Tacoma show, like, that would make a ton of sense to do Danielson and Darby in Tacoma, but I see it as really tough to have Moxley lose in this situation. Like, I'm watching this and, like, Darby should be winning this title in, like, 18 months, and Moxley should be the guy that he is beating this title for. Like, that should be your 2025 story, is Darby Allin getting to the next level. Moxley is not lying. He's not at that top level yet, but he's going to, and Moxley's going to get him there and be the guy that is knocked off at the end.
Totally, yeah. And the line tonight really sets that story up.
Yeah, this was a very strong segment. Marvez is with Christopher Daniels, and Nigel interrupts. He's got to speak to Tony Khan now. And Daniels is explained, this is a live show, but Nigel insists. Then they did a tribute to the victims of 9/11 and mentioning the fact that this was 23 years ago that 9/11 occurred. Mariah May, Queen Aminata, was next in a title eliminator bout. And this has never happened. My notes are gone. So, quickly give me some of your thoughts about this match. While
I didn't really have, I didn't have much play-by-play, you know, written down here. But I mean, from what I saw, it was a very hard-hitting match. At some point during the commercial, Mariah May kissed Queen Aminata before delivering her move, and Aminata returned the favor as she did her comeback. Some very hard-hitting kicks from Queen Aminata here, and then May eventually hits a draping DDT for a two count, and then the Storm Zero. In what I thought was a good match, both had some, you know, good-looking, hard-hitting offense. I thought the match was good enough to get people interested in, and maybe it was just a hotter crowd here, you know, in Lexington than certainly Champaign. So I thought this was definitely a more successful Mariah May title defense. But, you know, up until the end of this match, there is a definite noticeable lack of direction for what her next feud is, one that she would reveal at the end of this segment, thankfully.
Well, yeah, during the commentary, they explained Toni Storm wants a rematch in February in Australia.
Yes, yes. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the specter of Toni Storm is still there, but as far as, like, a next in line for Mariah May, Mariah May grabs the microphone. She says that she still hasn't had her celebration. She says somebody is missing and calls calls Mina Shirakawa to return. So, it seems obvious that Mina Shirakawa is the next feud, as I think some of us may have expected. And it's good. They have great chemistry together. It ties into, I think, the greater story that, has kind of preceded this Mariah May run. So, and I think everybody's always very happy to see Mina Shirakawa return.
The Young Bucks state how they wanted to have the greatest tag division when they launched this company, and turns out they did, but it's because of them. We're still doing all the heavy lifting 5 years in. All you fans claim you want a new team to take over this division, but no one has been good enough to replace us. So they booked this casino gauntlet because they are waiting for a team to step up, and the winners will face them at Grand Slam. Mm-hmm. So they are behind this match. There was a video on Jamie Hayter's return, and then Chris Jericho, Big Bill, and Brian Keith against the Iron Savages and Jack Jameson. And Jericho walks out with the backpack and wrestles in the orange juice stained jacket. Boulder and Bill have a face off. Then Keith is in with a diamond dust onto Jameson, and Jericho tags in, and perhaps the first time ever, he does the flex pin and gets the win on Jack Jameson in 2.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have tons of thoughts about this match.
Yeah. I mean, really just a setup for the post-match reveal.
He pulls up the backpack, and inside there is a framed photo of the former best friends. And Jericho states, "You are still obsessed with friendship. There are no friends in this business. And if you think you have friends, you're probably being used. So take your head out of your ass and give me my cash." So Orange Cassidy appears on the screen.
So maybe more notable in this particular moment, as Jericho utters the line, "There are no best friends, and there are no friends in this business." A very obvious look from Big Bill, looking concerned. So they're definitely starting the Big Bill babyface turn, or at least continuing, even some would say, the Big Bill babyface turn teases, and maybe even setting up something significant for Queens.
This did not seem Brian Keith seemed okay with this.
Oh, he's not paying attention. He's okay. Yeah, he knows there are no.
He understands this is a business relationship first.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. Big Bill. You gotta focus on everyone's facial reactions to this.
By the way, so what? Orange Cassidy likes to just keep a framed photo in that JanSport. You know, has he not never heard of JPEG? You know, something
phone?
Maybe he could. Yeah, like something he could, or at least like. Like a wallet.
Maybe he's a fan of
photo.
Old media.
But like a glass frame that he carries around in this backpack. What else is in this backpack?
That's heavy. Like you probably like if you're flying every week. I mean, they're probably going to make you take that out of your carry on.
It's fragile.
It's glass.
Well, yeah. Okay.
So Cassidy's on the screen, and he draws our attention to Mark Briscoe and Kyle O'Reilly, who come in here with an excavator full of coins that they proceed to pour $7,000 of coins into the convertible. And Orange Cassidy makes sure to get his exact change back. And Jericho freaks out. My car. He did not destroy the car. This was not Vince McMahon with a cement mixer. Okay. These were coins. This is aggravating, yes, but I don't think any damage was done to this car.
Well, first of all, shout out John Cena, who called this exact spot the night I guess Jericho demanded the $7,000. I would say, like, yeah, it's terribly annoying picking up every little coin from every crevice of this Bentley. I have to imagine one or two scratches would have, you know, taken would have been there, and you know how much the littlest scratch costs when you're trying to fix a car, John, okay? When you're trying to fix
a... Is this a rental?
Either way, he's paying for it, isn't it? I guess it depends if he had insurance on it or not. You would hope he did. Yeah.
I hate this backpack angle. I think this is like the silliest story going.
Something also tells me they probably expected this stunt to look a lot better on camera than it actually did. Like, I'm not exactly sure maybe what they thought that coins landing on a car would look like, but maybe they expected a bit more of an implosion. This just kind of I mean, it was funny, you know, an amusing game.
They almost needed like double the coins so that like the entire interior was brimming at the top and like overflowing. Like yeah, at least then you got a cool visual. Like you didn't even have that here. I mean, it's tough to guesstimate how many coins you need to fill a convertible.
By that point, you're actually probably getting close to $7,000 sum though. Because like what do you estimate this to actually be if it is real coinage?
I'm bad at these.
Got to get Brandon on this. How can we do the turnstile count on the coins here?
Yeah. Yeah. This would have been a more fun angle with like orange juice, I think.
No, the coins are great. The coins are great. I love this angle. Backpacks. I mean, it's, you know, really, I think I'm taking storytelling to the next level in professional wrestling.
This is going to turn things around.
No, the whole thing's been a real dud, in my opinion. I think Jericho is really trying hard to like find his next hit, and some peaks and valleys, you know. I think overall, like I don't know if people are even liking the learning tree anymore. Some weeks they are, like, you're my gauge, John. Some weeks you hate this, other weeks you seem to be entertained by it. But anything with orange so far in the backpack has, for me at least, definitely been a bit of a turnoff.
Well, if they are in fact doing this this slow tease of Big Bill, first of all, I would not be peaking this for a couple of weeks from now from Grand Slam. That seems way too quick for me. But the larger question is there that interest behind that? Are people clamoring for a Big Bill?
Queens
turn?
Is the biggest chance you can get to replicate the UK reaction.
But then where are you next week?
So I don't think it needs to be.
And is this guy on his own as a singles? Are you that optimistic of him in a prime babyface singles role after this?
But that's always been the end goal of this, right? You know, for somebody to make it out of the Jericho vortex means a feud with Chris Jericho that hopefully takes them to the next level. It might be a little earlier than we expected for Big Bill, but I mean that reaction from, what is it, Cardiff, you know, was a completely unexpected one that I think they might have at this point kind of missed their boat on, but they might have a second chance at it for Queens.
Well, that's in 2 weeks. So
I know. So I'm expecting an initial turn, not a full turn perhaps, but something. They got to do something special to take advantage of the sort of expected atmosphere that they might get for Big Bill.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, it's your chance to travel back to November 2004 as Wei Ting and I review WWE Raw, featuring Trish Stratus and Lita headlining the show. Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson are going to be covering New Japan's Destruction in Kobe event, and MCU later tackles Agatha All Along. All of that, plus Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course weekly, and ad-free versions of Rewind to Raw and Dynamite. $6 a month unlocks it all at postwrestlingcafe.com. Next segment, Nigel McGuinness is in the ring and states how there is no AEW title match at Grand Slam because the champion is probably gasping for air like Justin Roberts when he was choked with his own tie. Grand Slam should have the world champion at least compete. And he pulls out a contract and states that all the years he's had to watch Danielson while being an afterthought and all of his success, it should have been his. Danielson is afraid of him, and the one match everyone wants to see, he's afraid of. But Tony Khan isn't afraid. He knows a money match when he sees one, and Danielson, he challenges him for Grand Slam, stating that Oasis will play him to the ring, but Brian, will you follow with the final countdown, or have we seen the final match of the American Coward? The ball is in your court. And I guess Brian used his very limited screen time to text Tony Khan within the next 20 minutes because the graphic came up during the main event that it is confirmed for 2 weeks from tonight, which they did. They are not listing it as a title match. It's just a match with Danielson and Nigel McGuinness. But he has recovered enough, but not recovered enough to defend the title.
So Brian is confirmed. Like, we're not waiting for the moment that the match starts. Nigel comes out to Oasis, and they're not playing the game of like whether or not Brian will show up. Is that right?
No, they put the graphic up, Danielson versus Nigel McGuinness, and they stated it's official. And gotcha. I think for this show, you want to make it very clear. Like, they are pushing this Arthur Ashe Stadium show as hard as they can because they need to move a lot of tickets for this show.
Yeah, I would say so too. So let's go back to, you know, what we were discussing earlier and like the logic behind Darby Allin giving up his title shot at Grand Slam to for a essentially a number one contenders match with Jon Moxley.
He was told you can't wrestle Brian that night because he's out.
Yeah. Now Brian is in. So how do this deserves explanation? How is it that Darby is not automatically granted his title shot?
I would be like, hey, John, sorry, we could have a match Saturday on Collision or something, but I want my title match now that our champion is cleared for totally. This date, obviously. Yeah. I don't know. This was a big hole for me. I know not too many people are going to complain. You're getting two amazing matches. But, man, this required something because I just thought this was really a big gaping hole to try and bridge.
And I feel bad about that I'm even just being distracted by this like storyline stuff, because we should be celebrating this. This is incredible. Okay, I mean, we had a great, I would say, feel good moment in Nigel returning for the Casino Gauntlet, but now not just coming back for a singles match, but the match we all want to see from him in what might be like an actual either like proper send off for McGuinness or maybe the start of like a second career run. This is something incredible, you know, for any sort of longtime fan of professional wrestling. You know, the fact that this guy's getting to rewrite, you know, his conclusion to his story and getting it on a big stage like Arthur Ashe against his dream opponent, our dream opponent for him, a career rival. It's amazing. It's amazing. Just the little hiccup in logic. I hope they have a good explanation for next week. And I also hope we get like a great Nigel McGuinness promo next week. This week was good, but in 2 weeks time, they have a lot of backstory to try to catch people up on. Not everybody watched the last of McGuinness or the WWE documentary and knows exactly kind of what this guy, you know, had to go through as sort of like a parallel to Bryan Danielson's career. So they better have a hell of a video package next week. And I hope they do their work in telling the story.
It's one of those where you just wish there was a week or two extra, because you couldn't have Danielson on last week on this one coming out of the attack on Saturday. And you almost would have wanted that extra week where Danielson can accept the challenge and you get that big, you could still do the face to face next week, but that requires Danielson being back next week and you got to push this, and then boom, you're here in 2 weeks. Like this tonight, you really needed Danielson in some form or fashion, but you couldn't. You needed to sell this injury. But with Darby and with Nigel, like Brian being in between there, I think you could have made a bit better sense of it. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, tonight was about putting a card together to move tickets. And if they move tickets for Arthur Ashe Stadium, then kind of all of this is out the window, because that is the goal of this is we need a hot card, because we have like they are well under 5,000 tickets. Like I think they'll get to 5 like regardless, but mm-hmm. Like 5 is not anything to celebrate when a size of that venue and what you've done there before. Like you want to move thousands of tickets to just be in the neighborhood of what you did last year, much less 2 years ago.
Could this have been a match that they could have announced? Could this card have been a card that they could have announced even prior to All Out? I guess not the Moxley Darby one, because I guess Moxley needed to turn heel. But
it's like you had announced kind of Danielson and Darby Allin. Like you did have a title match attached to this that some people may have bought tickets for to see. Now, I don't think anyone's complaining about what you're getting, but mm-hmm. that was kind of your pseudo advertised main event for several since All In.
Right. And obviously, because the title's not on the line, this is not a career threatening match.
I guess not. Yes. No. So
he could lose. Nigel could.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess that's possible. It sets up a rematch then. So there you have it. Hook does a promo. He respects Roderick Strong, but then you jump me. When are you going to face me? Is basically what he was saying.
Then probably Grand Slam, I would think.
I think everyone's going to be on Grand Slam. They also got to fit stuff on that Rampage. Like, they've got a lot here going. We have 4 matches by the end of tonight already for Grand Slam, and you're right, that Roderick Strong match probably lands there. The Young Bucks come out for the main event, and it is the Casino Tag Team Gauntlet match. I feel like we just saw a great version of this, and we are kind of getting into that TNA territory of this being like their go-to. Mm-hmm. Like we're going to do a Royal Rumble once a month, and this is like 2 of these in 2 weeks.
We found a winning match type. Let's do one every 2 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's been an excellent match. I would say like this was maybe like the least of the ones that they have done so far. They've been high quality matches. Not to say I was down on this main event, but I don't want them to exhaust this gimmick because they have made this kind of their battle royal calling card. FTR start with Will Ospreay and Kyle Fletcher. And early on, there's the powerplex onto Will Ospreay. Vincent and Dutch were in third. And suddenly, we got a three-team race here. Who's going to be going to Arthur Ashe Stadium? I think people are like, oh, man, Vincent and Dutch. Matt Taven and Mike Bennett are in fourth. And Fletcher hits this Orihara moonsault to both members of FTR. The Acclaimed are out fifth. They get a big reaction. We saw Stokely Hathaway in the front row, but he never came into any kind of focus later on.
Yeah, what was he there for? Who was he feuding
with? He was just identified. They noted he's there. Perhaps they will. Well, I'm sure they will follow up and maybe he's involved or scouting or doing something. But okay. That was kind of odd. MXM Collection are in sixth, coming off their Rampage main event. And there's a four-person vertical suplex, and then the mic drop is hit to Dax, but Mansoor makes the save. Ospreay and Fletcher both apply figure fours as FTR apply sharpshooters, but all four submissions get broken up. Seventh are Top Flight, which allowed Ospreay and Dante to square off. The audience got into that. And then we had this great spot where Bowens takes the Shatter Machine, and everybody, we're talking like 10 people, dive to break up the cover, and it was a cool visual. And then number eight, the biggest baby faces in this whole match, the Outrunners. They come out, and of course, they have the ties to OVW, so you even got an OVW chant here in Lexington. But man, were they popular. Like, I spoke on Collision. Like, they got this reaction out of a crowd that was not super hot, but this was another level for this this cameo.
I would say the breakout stars of maybe this entire edition of Dynamite, the reception that these two got without, I think, any significant push on Dynamite itself. Really, it's just those great vignettes that you see on Collision. Obviously, I think getting a win on Collision seems to have really driven up their momentum as well. And then you had something on the kickoff, but this was like a big, essentially a debut for these two on Dynamite.
And they did the right city for this. And then GYV were the last team in. So FTR jumps them at the entrance. Turbo Floyd superplexes Mansoor onto everybody. And then Fletcher hits a brainbuster on Bennett. Dante hits a snap Rana to Fletcher. And the close comes when Dante goes for a splash, lands on the knees of Fletcher, and there's a hidden blade from behind by Ospreay to Dante, and Kyle Fletcher pins him. So it will be Kyle Fletcher and Will Ospreay challenging the Young Bucks at Grand Slam, which should be a amazing match. And I kind of like the idea of you put the tag titles on these guys, whether it's a short run, if this leads to the return of Mark Davis and Kyle Fletcher has cheated on him. If you don't have like something solid, like Ospreay can still do his singles matches and you can have him attached to a tag team.
The more Will Ospreay, I don't think anybody would be complaining. This match like was definitely in terms of star power the lowest just by sheer fact that it's the tag team division. And unfortunately, when you're talking about the tag team division, it's not going to be as interesting as seeing like Okada in there. And suddenly here comes like, you know, Will Ospreay, here comes an Orange Cassidy, here comes, you know, like a Kyle O'Reilly. The tag teams overall just aren't as over. But it became a very entertaining match by the end. I thought the outcome of this match kind of spelled maybe the state of the division where there are clearly no teams that are big enough stars right now to get this spot. I mean, they've taken out GYV and FTR, but honestly, like FTR, we've seen a million times with the Bucks, and GYV, I'm not as interested in to see as I am Ospreay and Fletcher teaming up against the Bucks. So kind of spells you like, you know, the state of the division right now on the tag team side of things. But great momentum for the Outrunners. You know, they received an incredible, I think, ovation, and clearly a team that AEW should and are probably doing a lot more with.
So for Grand Slam, we have Bryan Danielson against Nigel McGuinness, John Moxley against Darby Allin, Young Bucks against Kyle Fletcher and Will Ospreay. I feel there was one other one in there as well, but that is what we have.
Maybe Shirakawa and Mina. Oh, sorry, and Mariah May, maybe.
Perhaps.
Yeah,
Hook and Roderick Strong, they're teasing as well. So anyway, you've got your big matches. So now it'll be very interesting to see. Like, they need to treat the next 2 weeks, like that's a pay-per-view they are building up for. And you do have another pay-per-view coming up October 12th, which is only a month away. So you have to, you're peaking for a lot. They've got that 5-year anniversary show right before Wrestle Dream. It's a lot of big shows that they have to build up in a very short period of time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How did you think tonight's show did following All Out? I thought this was a better follow-up than that Dynamite we got in Champaign following All In by a significant portion, because that was a real down crowd, and it just did not feel like you were following your biggest show of the year.
Yeah, I think Lexington really helped maybe account for a lot of that. I really liked the follow-up with Jon Moxley on this show. He was in multiple segments, and I thought every one of them felt worthwhile. We got his explanation for why he turned on Bryan. We had his, match title shot challenge, I guess, with Darby Allin that I thought was also very good. Good promo from Pac. They're kind of keeping the... Mercedes Moné had no role on the show, and maybe they're just kind of keeping that off for now. What else? What else needed follow-up? Swerve, we didn't hear from, but I thought the Hangman Page follow-up was really strong as well. Ricochet had a really good match, so, you know, that was probably worth discussing as well. And then
then there's the backpack stuff on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are. They did announce at the end of the show Jericho and Orange Cassidy on next week's Dynamite. Collision is being taped on Thursday night. They didn't announce anything for Collision, as I recall.
All right.
Tune in Saturday night. I'm sure we'll get some announcements online before Saturday. But those tapings are Thursday night. So in theory, you'll have the whole card by late Thursday night.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Dynamite in the books. And now it's time to open up the feedback, the super chats. Did we get any snail mail?
You know, I didn't check. I haven't checked snail mail for quite a bit. So
the physical post office, perhaps. But yes, let's go to some feedback.
Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com. Want me to start, John?
Sure.
Andrew from Cape Breton says, a good Dynamite that was very story-focused. I thought Ricochet had a much better match with Sammy this week, and that's definitely the Ricochet I wanted in AEW. I also enjoyed the Casino Gauntlet match, but was disappointed with the ending. The tag team division has been rough recently, and tonight could have been used to establish someone new. Instead, they went with two singles wrestlers. AEW's tag division certainly has the talent, but it lacks any real focus. Plus, I wanted to see the Bucks versus the Outrunners. I know the match with Ospreay and Fletcher would be better technically, but the Outrunners could have brought out some PWG-style absurdity. Yeah, I mean, judging by tonight's reception and I think the presentation of the Outrunners and getting like a pretty prime focus in the Gauntlet, I expect that they want to maybe tell a longer story for the Outrunners before they actually have them challenge for the championships. If they do it right, they might even get like viable contenders to actually beat, you know, to actually become the tag team champions. But I think it takes a bit more of a longer story to get there.
Wolfman Handsome, what a generous bunch the AEW roster is. Ask and you shall receive was the theme of this show. Moxley asks Darby for a title shot and gets it. Callis asks Ospreay for a team up and gets it. Nigel asks the boss for a title shot against the broken champion and gets it. We should call, they didn't make that super clear, but it's not listed as a title match. I'm fairly certain that that is not a title match. Jericho asks for $7,000 and gets every cent. Okada was the only one to buck the trend. Can you guys explain how Bryan is too banged up to face Darby at Grand Slam, but the inactive commentator gets a world title shot? Tony Khan looks like a fool with this decision. I think the learning tree was teaching Big Bill a meta lesson on the wrestling business with his diatribe on friendship. What a wise man. I cannot explain the matchmaking, but I don't think it's as... I think it'd be even wackier if Nigel was getting the title shot.
So something to clarify, at least on the official graphic here, there's an asterisk to the graphic that says if Bryan is cleared to wrestle. Okay. So at this point, we don't know if
that was not included, I believe, on the broadcast when they put this graphic up. But
somebody in the chat room saying they mentioned it on commentary. So, I mean, I don't know. It's a small detail.
Well, Nigel's promo certainly was set that up, like if, but.
Yeah. So at this point, Bryan is not cleared to wrestle. We don't know if we're going to get this match yet, but obviously they're doing everything they can to tell you, to tease you that, hey, if you buy tickets, you're very likely to see this match. But in storyline, Bryan is not cleared to wrestle. Therefore, I guess it makes sense that Darby would need an opponent and Darby versus Mox can proceed. And then I guess
This is way more complicated than it needs to be.
They are going to probably do the whole teasing either like up until the moment that Nigel comes out, or maybe I think they probably have to maybe spell it out by next week that much clearer, you know. So
well, okay, let's go to our next piece of feedback here.
Is that me or you?
Yes.
Okay. This is Muggin, who says, Dynamite did a solid job building to Grand Slam. Hate has been a hell of a motivator for Nigel to get a world title shot, whereas hate has driven the Hangman deeper into the abyss. So he's not getting a title shot. That it does not say that at all on the graphic. So, I mean, the fact that two people in the feedback are confused about it suggests to me that that might indicate that several people are confused by it, but no title shot. The Moxley cold open was well done. Christian Cage won't see it coming when he decides to invoke his title shot. Do the right thing, Luchasaurus. The Casino Gauntlet was good, but it needs to be saved for the big pay-per-views. Doing two so close together does reduce its appeal. I don't disagree with Muggin at all.
And the last one is Brian from New Jersey. Pretty hot show. No Danielson, no Swerve, no MJF, but they had their reasons for not being there after All Out. And this show tonight was buoyed by everything else. A very busy but fun Casino Gauntlet. It remains a winning concept, and Ospreay and Fletcher were the best choices to win. A lot of work done to bolster Grand Slam as the mini pay-per-view it's been made out to be these past few years, and Danielson versus Nigel seemed to draw a big reaction. Great promo work from Darby and Hangman. Jericho was right to react like he did to the change being poured on his Bentley. You ever try to retrieve coins from the cracks of car seats? Excruciating. Why do I have a feeling this happened to Brian with a $7,000 debt that was owed?
Yeah, and an excavator. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, there you go. Hot angle to some. Others, not as much. But there you have it, everyone. That is Dynamite in the books. We are going to be back on Thursday. The latest installment of Talk is coming your way. What are we, Wei and I, going to discuss? Well, we are going to have 7,000 topics to go through on Thursday. So
we're going to have a coin for each topic that we're going to be throwing into John's car. Yeah.
Yes.
No, we just turn the mics on. We hang out and we just like record whatever comes out. And for some reason, a majority of you have told us that this is your favorite podcast that you guys listen to in the Post Wrestling Cafe. So we don't do them very often. We pull them out even as infrequently as Tony pulls out the Casino Gauntlet. Okay. I'm going to say quarterly that we do these shows. So I'm looking forward to it. Just hanging out. It's one of my favorite shows to record with John.
All right. And this month, postwrestlingcafe.com, that's where you can support Post Wrestling. $6 gets you 30 days access, and that gets you all these extra shows, including Rewind to SmackDown each Friday night, including the season premiere on USA this coming week. Collision Course returns Saturday night. It's live every Saturday with John Cena and Kate from Montreal. And Wei and I will have another Rewind Away this month. We will also have MCU Later kicking off Agatha All Along with Rich Fan and WH Park. Destruction and Kobe will be reviewed by Karen Peterson and Bruce Lord. And who knows what else will be coming your way. In 2 weeks' time, by the way, we've got Grand Slam on the same day that the Vince McMahon series comes out on Netflix.
Goodness. Wow. It's going to be a very busy day. Should I just call in sick on Thursday? Because I'll be just so exhausted from watching everything.
Yeah, that's gonna be a lot in one day. Are you just gonna plow through that Vince McMahon series?
I'm probably gonna watch it at least several in a row. I don't know about all six, but I might even watch it backwards because I think the end is what I'm most interested in. So
you can I thought you meant literally watch it backwards for some hidden meaning or something. But I understand.
Oh, okay.
Chronologically, got it.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for us. Thanks to everyone joining us live in the chat room or downloading this after the fact. Make sure you go to youtube.com/postwrestling. Hit subscribe. It makes Wei's day. Hit subscribe and do your part. It's like recycling.
Hit subscribe and give us a controversial opinion in the comments. People tend to love those on YouTube. You know, watch yourself get upvoted. Watch yourself get downvoted. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's it, everyone. So there you have it. Thanks to everyone for listening. Watch out for the dogs.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get packs of juicy red, green, black, or tri-color variety seedless grapes for $3.99 each. Then get tender boneless chuck roast or steaks for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.